Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Justin Root of Mattapan was killed by law enforcement in February. Root was 41 years old. The Norfolk County District Attorney's Office ruled the shooting, which involved five Boston police officers and one Massachusetts state trooper, was justified back in March. On Monday, Root's sister filed suit against both the department and the city of Boston, alleging a wrongful death. Briefly, here's what happened that day. On February 7th, police were called to Brigham and Women's Hospital after reports of a man with a gun. A Boston police officer at the scene says that Root pointed what appeared to be a firearm at an officer. Two officers shot at Root, striking him. A police bullet also struck a valet near the building. The valet survived. Root fled the scene in his vehicle, driving 4 miles to a shopping center on Route 9 in Chestnut Hill. And there's where the interaction at the heart of this lawsuit took place. There, Root exited the vehicle, and it's undisputed that he was injured. He was approached by a woman offering assistance, but police ordered her to step away and for Root to put his hands up. Root was in a crouched position. Police say he did not raise his hands and instead reached into his jacket. At that point, five police officers and one state trooper who were present, among them, fired 31 bullets in 3 seconds. 26 hit Root, and he passed away. Police say they learned after the incident that Root wasn't carrying a firearm but a BB gun. The lawsuit filed by Jennifer Root Bannon paints a different picture of those final moments. It claims Root posed no immediate threat, and police used unnecessary and disproportionate force against him. A few hours ago, we reached Jennifer Root Bannon and Evan Root, Justin's father. I began by asking Evan Root to tell us how he remembers his son.
He was a very creative person. He loved life. He loved so many people. So many people loved him. He had a passion for music. And he lived his life around creativity, really. He touched so many people's lives with his kindness and open heart that when he died, the outpouring was incredible from all over the country, people who had known him in school and so forth. So although he had a psychiatric disability, which certainly affected his life greatly, his spirit was a beautiful spirit, and he's really sorely missed by the family especially, and by so many friends.
I can hear the grief in your voice, Evan, and I appreciate you joining us and talking about him. Jennifer, I'm going to turn to you now because we're here today to talk about the heart of this lawsuit, which is the interaction at the shopping center. I know you have seen body camera footage from that. You heard me recount the general events. What is your perception of what happened in the shopping center?
Well, I know what happened now because I have reviewed all of the body cams and listened to audio recordings of statements from witnesses. So in my own words, I can just say that my brother, there was a crash in Chestnut Hill. He got out of the car and fell to the ground. He was already severely injured from being shot at the Brigham's. I know that he walked over, well, actually was kind of stumbling over to the mulched area, and a former EMT ran over to help him. And she did reach him, and she did put her hands on his shoulder. He couldn't speak. She saw that he was covered in blood. And within seconds, all these officers were running with their guns out and telling her to move and run. And she did. And before they shot him, there was an officer who actually kicked my brother. And when I read that, it was just gut-wrenching to know that he was dying on the ground. He was covered in blood. He was barely conscious. And these officers could not see that within being 5 feet from him. I haven't even been able to really wrap my brain around it because it's unconscionable. These officers had a duty to observe the situation, and they killed him.
Jennifer, I hear the pain in your voice too, and I know these questions are challenging and difficult. I do want to ask, the Norfolk County District Attorney found the use of force justified, specifically pointing to this moment when police say your brother, when asked to put his hands up, reached into his jacket. And at this point, police say they didn't know then that he'd been in possession of a BB gun. But your suit alleges that because Justin didn't point or brandish the gun at the police, that the shots killing him were not justified. I want to make sure that is the claim in the lawsuit, correct?
They were not justified. I mean, this was someone who was not fleeing. My brother was not going anywhere. And the EMT saw it. She wasn't afraid. And I will never be able to understand how six armed officers could get so close to an injured man on the ground covered in blood and be afraid.
The suit, Jennifer, also quotes some callous comments from the police officers after the shooting. There's some profanity in there, so I won't quote them here, but also a refusal to check your brother for a pulse. Those comments are apparently heard in the police body camera footage. How did it feel to hear and know about those comments?
I was alarmed at first because I thought if these were people who were really afraid for their life, that they wouldn't be talking like that. There was no sense of feeling that kind of scared feeling. This was more like a, we did it, congratulations. And I have no words for the comments and communications that they had with each other. It was horrible to listen to.
I'm really sorry for that. We've talked about the fact that the suit really involves the portion where your brother arrives at the shopping complex area on Route 9. And it centers on the use of force in the chase there, but predominantly the shots fired at your brother then, the comments in the video heard afterward. If those two things had not happened, and I don't mean to make light at all, but if those two things had not happened, if you hadn't known about 31 shots in 3 seconds or the comments afterward, do you think you would still be filing these charges against the city and these departments? Was the rest of the interaction legitimate from the perspective of your family?
You know what, it's really hard to, I just like to deal with the facts and what happened. I can't kind of, you know, give you an idea of something that actually really didn't happen. It's hard to say.
Have you since February heard from the state, from Boston Police Department, from city leaders?
In the beginning, we did meet with Suffolk DA, Rachel Rollins. And after that, in early March, we met with the district attorney in Norfolk County.
And has anyone apologized to you or your family or expressed sympathy or remorse for what happened?
No.
I want to ask you, this shooting took place in February, and since then we've seen tremendous national attention over police violence after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis by police. Are you thinking about your brother's death differently, or are you processing it differently now than you did back in February, given the national moment of reckoning that we're in?
When all these deadly force cases came on the news, it was extremely painful for me. It was like bringing back trauma, because my heart goes out to every family that loses someone to this type of violence that is excessive.
Negligent training and supervision is one of the 7 claims in the suit that your family has filed. Do you think that if the police had had better training, that that would have changed this interaction?
Yes. Yes.
What do you think would have gone differently?
Well, one, I guess this has been a process for me, because I thought that there were protocols. I mean, there are protocols and rules in place when officers come up on scenes. You know, my brother didn't have anything in his hands. No one saw the gun in his hands or any type of weapon in his hands. And so I know that there's rules and regulations. I think what made me pause was realizing that these were in place and they don't adhere to this. And that's very scary for me.
Mr. Root, Evan, I can't imagine that it has been easy even to just listen to this conversation. I want to ask you, what do you hope comes of this lawsuit?
Well, I hope the truth comes out. I think there's been a lot of cover-up on the point of the police. And It just isn't right. Our son cannot be left with the legacy of what they report. And the truth must come out for him, and it must come out because without the truth, there's not going to be corrective measures made in the police organization. And that is, as my daughter just said, my heart goes out to the people, too, who have had a similar experience. And I'd like to see that reduced to near zero, if possible. I know that's zero is probably impossible, but that's what we really at heart are working for here. We can't bring Justin back, but we can help families to be, that would be our greatest hope.
That's Evan Root and Jennifer Root Bannon, father and sister of Justin Root, who was killed on February 7th by police. Jennifer Root Bannon has filed a lawsuit against Boston police, state police, and the city, saying the officers used unnecessary force and Root posed no immediate harm. Thanks to both of you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having my father and I, and for sharing Justin's story.
WBUR reached out to Massachusetts State Police and the City of Boston. Both declined to comment due to pending litigation, and we did not hear back from the Boston Police Department in time for our air. Now, for more on this story, we want to turn to Tanya Alanez, a reporter from the Boston Globe who covered this story. Hello, Tanya.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Tanya, you wrote about this lawsuit for the Globe today. You'd spoken with the family. Can I just start by asking you to reflect on what you just heard from Jennifer Root Bannon and her father, Evan Root?
Yes. Well, it's, you know, they walked you through the lawsuit from their perspective, making it clear that this is focused on the incident in Brookline after Justin had crashed his vehicle. And the disturbing information that they've learned after investigations have come together and recordings have been revealed and reports have been made.
So can you give us a quick overview? As I understand it, there are seven parts essentially to the suit. What's it alleging and what does it want from the police?
Well, it is asking for unspecified damages, primarily, the family says it's accountability for the officers' actions out there that they're looking for and some changes within the department to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. It is seven different allegations. It's wrongful death, primarily excessive use of force. There's also negligence and training and supervision alleged, as well as assault and battery, and then also due process rights violated, and holding him without due process.
So this is a complicated case in a number of ways. We know that Justin's father has said he was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. There's a lot of moving parts to what happened on that day. What makes it even more complicated is the fact that only one officer had a body camera on and rolling. And that footage is distorted. Two didn't even have cameras on them. Was that in violation with city protocols at that time in February? And how does that affect the case?
Simple reading of Boston police policy, clearly it's a violation that two of the officers didn't even attach the actual body cameras onto their beings that day. Two of them didn't even turn them on until afterward. And then, like you said, one officer had it on, but it seemed to have been obstructed by fabric or something, and it was turned off 5 minutes after the shooting. How the police department deals with that within, we don't know. The lawsuit just talks about those set of facts and doesn't go deeply into, you know, what should result from that. But clearly it's a violation, and one would wonder what is the point of body cameras if they're not worn or even turned on.
Tanya, have you seen that obstructed, to use your word, body camera footage that is available from that day?
I have not. I've requested it, but no. It sounds like there's also quite a bit of witness and you know, just like innocent bystander footage that also is going to become part of the lawsuit, but none of that is available yet for public view.
And your story for the Globe actually begins with a former EMT, and you heard Root Bannon bring that up as well. Had stopped, mm-hmm. happened to be in the shopping center, rushed to help Root. She was told to move away. Have you spoken with that witness, with that former EMT?
I have not, and her name is not disclosed within the lawsuit, though clearly she has been spoken with and interviewed by law enforcement, but that's not been made public yet.
And as you know, as we already mentioned, the Norfolk County DA found use of force was justified. Can you tell us a little more about that finding, which was back in March?
Well, I think the justification for the use of force is basically tucked into a basic paragraph of language in the DA's report. And it's where it describes, I believe, yes, Officer Fernandez. He observed Justin Root ignore commands to show his hands and instead reached into his jacket in a motion consistent with drawing a firearm, the DA wrote. In reaction to that, Officer Fernandez fired his weapon, and based upon the fears that he might be shot or killed. And then it says the other officers also, you know, followed suit based upon the same concerns. Jennifer will say that without any body cameras on, who can know? How can we know if that was an actual part of the incident or not? It is the perfect wording for justification, however.
Tanya, you were in touch with the Boston Police Department for the story. Massachusetts State Police both declined to comment for that story. Have you been in touch since? Do you expect to hear from them?
Waiting to hear back, but no, not really. I mean, basically got the pending litigation, no comment until we're in court. So I don't really expect to hear back.
And lastly, I was struck by a line in the filing that stated that a reasonable officer could or should have known their actions violated Root's rights. And that sounds like a direct reference to the doctrine of qualified immunity, which has been a controversial part of the police reform discussion here in Massachusetts. The roots are white, but this case is happening during a push for police reform after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Does this case take on a different significance given the moment we're in?
I certainly think so. I think people look at it in a different light, react to it from a different perspective than they might have. And it just seems to be one more example of what...
Tanya,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish your sentence. It's that delay when we're both remote.
It seems one more example of what has the country in unrest.
And what comes next for the case?
I guess they prepare for trial and you know, first thing would be to hear responses to the lawsuit from the defendants and then take it to trial, I guess.
Well, Tanya Alanez, reporter with the Boston Globe, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about your story.
Thank you, Tiziana.